Chiles. Then I stop to my left, and since I'm on the left, we'll do James. How are you?
I'm good, Leons. Nice to be up here in Spokane, and thanks so much for having us on your show.
Oh, always, it's always a pleasure to have you guys on. Well, I haven't had you guys on together, but it's always a pleasure to have you on. You've both been on the show before, but separately. But now you're on together as a duo, and we'll get to that in a minute. But James, I mean, I play your CDs. I've done them for years, and I've talked about you when we did the Christmas show here. I really did talk about you then, too. You have no idea. And but then you are here live today, and I wanted you to just give the people a little bit of your background.
Just talking about myself,
yeah,
about rather than the duo.
Yes.
Well, I've been living in the Northwest since 1978. I'm in my 38th year now at the University of Idaho, where I teach guitar and also a class in rock history. Had a guitar program
there.
Wait.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to cut you off. Rock history, like rock and roll history?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my. We got to talk about that.
Okay.
But keep going.
We'll get back.
Okay.
As you know, I have taught at other schools in the area. For many years, I was part-time at Idaho. I taught at Spokane Falls for a few years. I taught at Washington State. I taught at Lewis Clark State College. But over the years, those other jobs fell away, and now I'm fortunate to have a full-time position at the University of Idaho, and I'm very happy there.
Wonderful. And then let's go further back, before 78. I seem to remember you were in Connecticut studying with a friend of ours, mine, and then your professor, and then my shortly became your friend, Richard Provost.
That's right. Yeah, I was in Hartford for 2 years. That's where I got a master's degree in performance. And prior to that, I was in San Francisco at the conservatory, where I studied with George Saccalario.
Okay.
I don't know whether you know him
or not. I know George very well. Very well, yes. Okay, we're touching upon the history. And now you are here, and I'd like to have them get, they're hearing your voice, your vocal cords. I'd like to have them hear your vocal sound on the guitar. So we're going to have from one of James's CDs. What did you pick, James?
I chose an original composition, a little homage that I wrote to the Spanish composer Federico Mompo, from the CD Guitarra Americana, released in 2011.
That was a wonderful piece there, homage to Mompo, and as I was saying to James in here, and unfortunately the headphones are gone, so I didn't get to hear it, but I remember listening to it multiple times, and you play it very beautifully, and you totally captured the spirit of Santiago de Compostela.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a place in Spain where people do pilgrimages to, the big cathedral there, and it's everything is preserved as it was in the 11th century. It's a very magical place, and that piece certainly captures that.
Thank you.
Okay, so now I'm going to move to my right, and I'm going to go to the gentleman on my right. And his name is John Paul Shields. And John, let's talk about you a little bit.
Thank you for having me.
Also, my pleasure. Always nice to have a live performance.
Great.
So tell us, not me, because I have a little bit of knowledge about you, but tell the listening audience a bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, so I am a Spokane native, and I started playing guitar when I was 16 and really became impassioned by the instrument. And within a couple years, I was changing my major from engineering to music and studying with Stephen Novacek at the University of Washington. And it was there that I really started to cultivate my classical guitar skills, because originally I was actually playing on steel string, finger-style music, and often classical repertoire on a steel string, but with a guy named Mark Camry. But then I...
you studied with Mark. Mark was a student of mine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's a great player. Yeah, really great player.
Yeah,
he invented the neck up. And
he recorded the Carcassi studies, if I remember correctly.
Both. I definitely remember both recordings.
He's out in North Dakota now, isn't he?
Yeah, he came to digress a bit, he came to study with me at Whitworth when I was running the program there on full scholarship from North Dakota.
Oh, wow. Yeah, great player.
Yeah.
So then I started studying with Stephen, and I was in Seattle living, teaching guitar and you know, gigging and playing. And then eventually felt like I was hitting a almost spiritual dead end in what I was doing. I didn't quite understand what I was doing and why. So I left. I went to Peru. And the idea was to learn Spanish originally. And then I realized I just loved Peruvian guitar music. Mm-hmm. There was a guitarist named Raul Garcia Zarate. And Raul Garcia Zarate for the... Mm-hmm. It's hard. My wife is Peruvian, and so we speak Spanish all the time. So like...
and your accent's improving. It's, I mean, when you were talking inside, it's really... You sound native.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. So I studied with Raul Garcia Zarate, and eventually, but I had to work with some musicians down there and kind of worked with a guy named Frank Collazos, who will hear him and myself. I was invited to play on duo on a CD in a little bit. And then eventually worked with Luis Salazar Mejia, and we produced, I recorded the CD and edited an Andean guitar method with him. And then I came back to Spokane, and it was there that I started to get to know James Reed, and my wife was going to study down at WSU in fashion design, and I was like, well, if you're going down there, maybe I can talk to James and I get my master's. So that's
it worked out great.
Yeah, it worked out fantastically.
Well, let's not get to the James and John connection yet too much.
Okay,
let's stay with the John. And John, that's fine. I'd like you to play something for us so they can hear your guitar voice.
Okay, great. So I thought I'd play one of the pieces that really got me into Latin guitar music was a Spanish piece by a composer named Isaac Albeniz. And this song is called Cádiz, which is a city on the southern coast of Spain. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you, John. Very lovely. Brings back lots of memories. Wonderful, wonderful plan. Okay. Now, we're going to move from the solo playing to some experiences you had while you were in Peru with some duo playing. So tell us about that.
Sure. So learning Peruvian music was fantastic because it really brought in a skill that I was kind of avoiding. And that is of listening, of truly listening, which is, there's an ironic twist because how can you
play music without listening?
Yeah. Leon is utterly perplexed, but I think he understands what I'm talking about. Oftentimes, when you begin your progress with reading music, it's very easy to become very dependent on the page. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say I wasn't listening, but I didn't understand what it meant to truly listen and truly participate. So as a soloist, I was doing okay because I could kind of fake it. It was all in my own head. Mm-hmm. But to connect with the rest of the world, I really had to open myself up mm-hmm. to a new experience. And that was with Raul Garcia Sarte. And you know, the story we've shared once or twice.
Yes. But that's okay. You can
share
it
yeah,
again.
Yeah. But, but yeah, I had to basically go to these lessons, look at a page of sheet music that he gave me, and then watch him play something totally different. And be like, oh, well, you're not playing what's on the page. And he's like, oh, we can play what's on the page. It's like, no. I want to learn what you're doing. So to get to that point, I had to learn a bunch of Peruvian rhythms. And luckily, I did have arrangements of his, but I really needed a lot of coaching. So what you hear on this CD is we'll listen to Bajo el Cielo de los Incas. Or Bajo de los el Cielo de los Incas, which is under the Incan sky. And it's a song that begins with something called a pasacalle, which is like a march. And then it goes to this rhythm called huayno, which is a very interesting kind of... And it sounds really easy to follow, but to play is another...
Yes, they really get slightly behind a beat with that slap.
Yeah, it's got this funny kind of thing to it. So, yeah, let's listen to that and kind of transition. So this is me in duo with Frank Collazos, the first musician I worked with in Peru.
Okay, that was a duo coming from Peru, with half of the duo sitting here to my right, John. We're going to go to a duo that's right here in Spokane, and I should mention again they're playing in Spokane tonight at Gonzaga University. What time is that? Because I wasn't sure.
That's at 7:30, and it's in the University Chapel, not the Cathedral. So the University Chapel is on the third floor
of the administration building.
Yeah.
Of the administration building on the very top. Okay. And so there will be a live concert there with John Paul Shields and James Reed, and they'll be doing duo music. So since you're going to be playing duo music, let's do something. Explain to me and the listening audience what you're going to play.
James?
Yeah, we're going to start with a group of pieces by Bolivian composer Jaime Zanamon, who lives now in Brazil and has written quite a lot of music for both solo guitar and guitar with other instruments, including cello, I think violin, and then, of course, this music for two guitars. The piece that we're going to play is from, should we just play a movement, do you think, Leon?
No, how long is it?
Oh, they're, a couple minutes each?
Yes.
I'd say play a couple of movements.
Okay, we'll play a couple of movements. Yeah. We'll play the Valsina and Regreso from this group of 12 Fantasias by Jaime Zanamon. Thank you.
very lovely, guys. Thank you. And I was, so, you know, I was listening in between while you guys were changing music. And when you're playing live in an audience, oftentimes you have to try and keep the audience quiet during movements. And it was so nice not to have to say, shh, 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 quiet, quiet. So it was, that was a nice treat for me.
Thanks so much, Leon, for not being a nuisance.
That's good. I really tried not to clap in between. Anyway, John, you were talking about learning to listen and having that awareness that a lot of solo instrumentalists don't have, unless you've played. That's one of the things that happens when you're playing in an orchestra. You have a conductor, you're watching him, you know where the downbeat is, and he's cueing people. And usually, a lot of classical guitarists or a lot of solo instrumentalists, period, they are so into their own little world that they're not listening to everyone else. And when you play with someone else, it's another whole experience. So in this duo right now, at least with this two movements that you played, you were playing the accompaniment, John, and you were the voice, James.
That's correct.
And so you had to listen to James and follow where James went with it. And if James wanted to phrase it in one particular way, you had to make sure that you stayed there. Now, how do you explain to not me, but the audience, how you achieve that?
Yeah, I think you understand this concept, Lee.
I do.
For all the playing you've done, I don't know. I think, preach you to the choir if I say anything. Yeah, but so especially with the first piece we played, the Valsina, it's really interesting because there's also a little bit of an interplay there because James is listening to me start some of the phrases,
right.
But the way James, because he's playing in between what I'm doing, and for layman's terms,
right?
He's playing in between what I do, which dictates the rhythm, and
that's
so
right.
He can start to basically call an ending to a phrase or what's called rubato or
retard,
which is the slowing down, and basically, I just cue into that, and it's really a pretty remarkable experience to actually start to share this music with someone because you kind of get in this collective rhythm, and it's almost linguists talk about a collective grammar. When you're speaking with a group of people, grammar starts to change, and I kind of feel like music has that element. Like we start to change the rhythm in the page into something that that becomes alive.
Yeah, it comes to life, exactly. You know, many composers, and I would say that, you know, the orchestra is wonderful, but many composers really, their forte of writing is for string quartet. And you have that exact experience of all this, with four different voices and feeding off of each other and building off of each other and listening and interacting and bringing the music off the page to life. That's a perfect way to explain it. So you're going to get a chance to hear that tonight at 7:30 at Gonzaga up in the chapel, which is in the administrative building and the top floor. I think it's the third, but whatever the top floor is. It's up to take the elevator to the top and walk to the back, and you'll see someone sitting there and come in and enjoy a concert.
And it's free, so that's kind of a...
And it's a freebie. Oh, my goodness, that's even better because... Not everything is free these days. So they get some
just
live.
Great music, apparently,
You know what they say about the best things in life, right?
Oh, free. Okay. So let's go to the next thing, not from the program necessarily, but are you guys going to be doing any solo work tonight or a totally duo?
You know, this is the first time we will perform together and play a concert that is strictly music for two guitars.
Nice.
We've performed a number of times over the last 18 months, I'd say, but in every one of those programs, we mixed in some solo music along with music for two guitars, but we really want to work on our identity as a duo and our development as a duo and thought it would be a nice idea to play a full program of nothing but music for two guitars.
Okay, and why is that? Is there something on the horizon that I should be asking about?
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Among other things that we're planning for 2016 are we'd really like to make a CD. I know JP has done some recording. I've done quite a few recordings as a solo artist. I would really love to have the experience of recording a CD for two guitars, because it's such a different experience playing with another person or with other musicians than it is playing by yourself. It takes different skills. In some ways, it's much less stressful. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know this from your own experience. But mainly, it's just something different. You know, I've been doing mainly solo guitar for a long time, and I don't mind trying something new or something a little different and really focusing on it and trying to do it at a very high level.
Well, yeah, and one of to talk about duos, before you guys play the next piece, I'll have you introduce that in a minute. A duo that I went to hear in 1971, which was Thrown Together with Julian Bream and John Williams. And it was at Town Hall in New York. I was doing a show, what was it, Promises. And I took the night off, and I went over to see that, and they had music stands, and they were reading, because they really had, they threw this together. And then I've listened to interviews since with Julian Bream talking about it. I don't think I've heard John talk about it, but talking about that, you know, it was really interesting to come together with Johnny, because he had such a different way of approaching music and different style. And then I likewise, I think John, who I didn't hear say this, but I'm sure he felt it, to sit and play with Bream, who had another whole different style of interpreting music. And they came together, and in the first two or three numbers, it was okay. It was two guys, very competent players, but reading music. On the third or fourth number, they became a duo. And you could see this, like, oh, man, I like this. And to the point that by the rest of the concert, they were really nailing it. I mean, they were phrasing, they were looking at each other, they were breathing, they were in communication. And they then did the concert again, and then they put out their CD. So it was obviously, like you're talking about, James, that experience of doing something different and playing. Now, Bream had done a lot of playing with a lot of other people, and so had Williams. Sure. But those two together was definitely a very high point. I mean, Bream in those days was one of my favorite guitarists, but he was not always the cleanest playing guitarist. He would get up there, because he was drinking a lot in those days, too, and he would get up there and slop through something sometimes. And Williams, on the other hand, oh, I should tell the story, then I'll shut up. I took my wife, my first wife, to see John Williams first, because I was trying to get her into classical guitar. And she sat up there, and she fell asleep. Because John played everything letter perfect, and everything was great, but it wasn't as emotional. I took her to see Bream, and she was on the edge of the chair the whole night. So putting these two different approaches together, I think that Bream cleaned his act up in the sense of he is really, but right around that same time, I don't know, maybe it was the year before he did that, the Five Bagatelles, that was the year before. But I saw a difference in Williams playing too. Mm-hmm. So let's see if I see a difference in you guys playing. What are you going to play next?
Well, since I got to play the solo voice on the first selection that we did, I think we'll reverse roles and play a grand polonaise concertante for you by Mauro Giuliani. This is one of three that he wrote that were opus 137. And on this particular duo, JP is going to have the solo part, and I will be accompanying him.
Okay, nice.
Thank you.
another movement, or is there another movement coming?
No, there's not.
There is not. Oh.
These are single movement pieces.
I'm disappointed.
Sorry.
Oh. Okay. Now, this was Mauro Giuliani, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about Mauro Giuliani just a little bit. What period was he from? What's his dates? Put you on the spot.
Let's see. I think 1778 to 1837.
That's about, yeah, very close. Right there. Okay.
He was a contemporary of Beethoven, mm-hmm, and a contemporary of another very fine classical guitarist, Fernando Sor,
yes,
as well as Dionisio Aguado. Mm-hmm. Like Beethoven, Giuliani spent most of his creative life in Vienna because his home country, Italy, was not a very good place to be a guitarist in the early part of the 19th century, whereas there were many opportunities for him in Vienna, where he not only played the guitar, but I understand he was a cellist and played, mm-hmm, in the premiere of Beethoven's Seventh, mm-hmm, Symphony. It was,
yes,
part of the orchestra.
Too. Yes, impressive. Now, when you said it wasn't a very good place in Italy, elaborate just a little bit.
Well, in Italy at the time, opera, of course, was at the very pinnacle of, mm-hmm, classical music. And it's not a form that's very friendly to the guitar,
yeah,
or well-suited to the guitar. Whereas Vienna was a place where there was a much wider variety of music. There was opera there, I'm sure, but everything else imaginable, too. There were very good string quartets, chamber ensembles of all kind, and it was a very good place for a guitarist to be. Concerts then were quite different than they are now. You would not go to see a Mauro Giuliani solo concert. Mm-hmm. He would have played one or two pieces in a sort of a potpourri program, mm-hmm, with many of the other musicians of the city at the time, and he was highly regarded, mm-hmm, by his peers there.
Good. Thank you. That was wonderful. The cello part, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. Villa-Lobos was very similar in the sense that he was a great guitarist, great composer, but also played the cello, mm-hmm, like the Boccherini things and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. John Paul Shields, I'm going to throw the ball to you for a second. Now, you've played Giuliani, you just finished playing it right now. What, mm-hmm, what mindset do you get into when you play Mauro Giuliani's music?
Well, it's a very different mindset. It's one that I'm developing, and it's interesting because the classical period of classical music, mm-hmm, and when I say this, this is not an insult. It's not quite as emotional or expressive. It has a very clear context, and it still has a clear an emotional content and a beauty to it. Mm-hmm. But I find I really have to tone myself down. Because,
well,
you know, like the romantic period is like, right, this crazy,
that's
wild
why, that,
thing.
That's why I threw it to you, because I wanted to know exactly.
Yeah. So when I play it, it's like, and listening to James play Giuliani, it's, mm-hmm, like, every time I listen to James play, it's like, that's how you should play it. That's, mm-hmm, what I need to do. And he's, mm-hmm, just like, whatever, man. But that's what I've been kind of realizing is that, you know, classical music has a beauty in its efficiency.
And its simplicity.
Yeah, and, yeah, its simplicity, because that was kind of the idea,
right?
You had this incredible extravagance with the Baroque period and, mm-hmm, and Baroque music, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, let's kind of simplify this. Mm-hmm. And that's what you find in classical music, a very simple, direct message.
They were the punk musicians of the early 19th,
yeah,
century.
Yet incredibly educated. Yeah, that's it. Maybe there's lots of there are educated punk musicians, many.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
We've got a lot of good friends.
Henry Rollins.
Yeah. Henry Rollins, absolutely.
Okay, so why don't both of you tell us what your feelings are about the performance tonight? You're playing at Gonzaga University, third floor in the chapel of the administration building, a free concert. James, what are you bringing to the concert other than yourself and the guitar?
Well, first of all, I feel very good about the program that we're playing. There's a lot of South American music. We played some selections for you from those fantasias by Jaime Zanamon. We're also playing a sonata by him, which is a larger piece, as well as a piece by another South American composer you might know, Celso Machado,
mm-hmm,
who lives now in Vancouver but is from Brazil. And in addition to that, we've got these pieces by Giuliani that are a wonderful contrast in style, as well as we're playing a couple of Leo Brouwer's arrangements of the music of Lennon and McCartney.
Nice.
And some wonderful...
Well, that one that was recorded. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but one that was recorded, I think Tannenbaum played the second.
Well, you know, Manuel Barueco and David Tannenbaum recorded these pieces together. And before they did it... Leo Brower made a recording that I have never heard with a Japanese guitarist. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember his name, and I can't right offhand.
Yeah, I can't. Okay, otherwise, I'm just going to be inventing a name. Yeah,
yeah. I've played that recording here, and I was really blown away by it. And then I looked at the notes. It's David Tannenbaum playing the other part. So yeah, very, very nice. So it's going to be a very interesting program. John, same question to you. What are you going to bring to it? Now let's focus, since we're talking about Brower, focus on the Brower and the duo that you're going to do.
Oh, okay. So the Brower, I mean, it's just Brower has a very unique harmonic language, mm-hmm. and it's really interesting to see how he approaches these arrangements, and he just has very clever ideas. So that's kind of fun to watch when you're playing Brower and then when you're playing the Beatles. So it's a neat contrast in that respect. With regards to the rest of the concert, James really organized the program. He's mm-hmm. found this incredible music and an incredible repertoire and really unique sounds mm-hmm. that have both a complexity to them, an intellectual sustenance, while at the same time having a wonderful folk-like lyric quality to them. So they run a great balance of what I think a concert should be and contain.
Wonderful. Now I'm looking at the time, and I don't know if I have time to have you play another piece. And if you had a really short duo spot or just a tag on something for a minute to a minute and a half, 2 minutes at most.
You know, I was thinking like the Machado, the Samba.
We're going to have 3 or 4 minutes.
We have 3 or 4? Oh. Okay. Thank you. We got two more minutes added.
Oh, the Death of Queen.
Death of Queen Jane. We'll do one of these English folk songs. It was arranged by Edward Flower and recorded some years ago. Edward Flower and Joel Block or Joel Cohn.
I'm not sure.
Both of these musicians are from the Northeast, and I don't honestly know what they're up to right now, but these arrangements that he made for two guitars are wonderful.
Nice.
Thank you.
James Reed, John Paul Shields, in the studio live, wonderful playing. Go to the website, kpbx.org, and you'll see pictures of us in the studio. Also, the guitar, Friends of the Guitar, Classical Guitar Series. With information, 2 more weeks to get your season's tickets. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leon.
You're very welcome.